Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. Welcome, everyone, to an absolutely special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. We're here at episode 101. We made it past the promised land, and we're here to bring you some Magic Finance 101, because this is a Magic Finance podcast, and we're trying to get people caught up to speed. I'm Marcel. I'm one of the hosts. I'm joined by my other esteemed hosts. We got Ryan, Jason, and Corbin.
I am Jason Alt. I'm a writer for GatheringMagic.com and QuietSpeculation.com, and I'm bouncing around between MTG Headquarters and MTG Price right now. Who knows where I'll land. And I'm very active on Twitter and Reddit and the Quiet Speculation forums, so I'm out there doing my thing. I'm joined by my co-host, Ryan Bouchard.
Yep. I am Ryan Bouchard. I write for GatheringMagic.com and do Brainstorm Brewery, and unlike Jason, I'm not out there, and that's about all I do.
I'm Corbin Hostler. I write for Quiet Speculation. I write for Brainstorm Brewery when we get around to actually writing for it. Do the podcast. I'm a coverage reporter for Wizards of the Coast, so you might see me running around at all the Grand Prix that you're at.
I like how you watered down your resume by mentioning that you were on the podcast they're listening to.
Your stock just went down. You're no longer hireable. Yeah. And me, I don't have an esteemed resume like my hosts at all. I just play Magic, and I'm like everybody else. I try to build my collection through Magic Finance, but I'm not a trader. I'm like the average common person that's paying attention to Magic Finance. And hopefully everyone else out here is listening, or most of you people listening is just like me. You're trying to figure out your edge. You try to figure out what you can do to get ahead in this expensive game called Magic the Gathering. So we got three experts here, pretty much. They've been through every facet of the game of Magic. They've been players, some of them very horribly, some of them decently. Some of them actually have won states. So they got that aspect. And some of them, and also they are traders, where we have pretty much Ryan and Jason. They just, they live exclusively on trading. So there's that whole aspect to it.
I like how clearly states is far more relevant than PTQ wins.
Yeah, totally.
I'll take it. I mean, either way, I win on both accounts.
Ryan with the humble brags in there.
I won.
Anyways.
Anyway, so on to Magic Finance, as that is about all we are actually good at.
Right. Well, you know, if you listened to episode 100, you heard us talk about this. You know, we used episode 100 as kind of a retrospective, looking back at everything we've done and getting to where we are. We want to use episode 101 going forward to actually help people who may be new to Magic, or at least new to the financial side of the game. We want to, you know, institute some Finance 101 type content. So what that means is every episode we're going to have some Finance 101 topic that we talk about, we spend some time on, just to kind of, you know, hit those major topics that maybe come up every now and then for you, but you don't know much about, but are actually very important to managing your collection, right? So what we're going to do today is kind of lay the groundwork for that, talk about some of the terms you need to know, what they mean to you, how to, you know, manage the basics of, you know, talking about Magic Finance, because if you don't understand what you're talking about, it's pretty hard to implement it.
Absolutely. So we're going to go kind of over some very basic stuff today. And then going forward, every week we're going to just hit one topic. And we're probably going to try to read an email from you guys as well. So if you have a topic that relates to MTG Finance, no matter how basic, go ahead and write that into brainstormbrew@gmail.com. We'll have that email address in the show notes. And we will work on getting that question answered for you.
Yeah, because one thing I'm sure of is if somebody out there has a question about it, there are no dumb questions, and you're probably not the only one who wonders. So a lot of times, you know, like Marcel said, we've been doing this for a while. We deal with this stuff every day. It can sometimes, You know, we don't want to just take stuff for granted that maybe we shouldn't. So that's what we need you guys to keep the feedback coming and tell us what you want to know about.
We don't know what you don't know.
And even if you do think that you know, there may be some things that you didn't know or you didn't know the best practices of. So, you know, this is going to open up the forum and, you know, pay attention. Or if you just think you're too good for this, you could turn out, you know, right about now.
You don't know what you don't know.
But you think you know if you knew that you knew.
There are known knowns and there are unknown knowns. And there are known unknowns and unknown unknowns.
Anyways, we'll stop before you all leave out of boredom. so let's start.
Yeah, let's known unknowns.
Let's start with one of the basic, just some of the terms and what they mean, more so than just what they are. I think a lot of people, maybe we throw a word at them, they understand what it means, but they don't necessarily understand how, you know, that applies financially. So first one we want to start with, easy one, staple. You know, what does it mean for something to be a staple? Say we're talking about a standard staple, a commander staple, a modern staple, legacy staple. What does that actually mean?
These are the key cards that you're going to see in most of the decks that are doing well at whatever tournament, GPs, FNMs, whatever, and within the format. So an ideal card, say, within standard, you'll say Rat Pack is a staple, at least, you know, within this standard, because it's going to be around. It's going to be in standard. It's going to be a dominant player. You could say the same for
Mutavault.
You could say the same for Mutavault's a standard, or like the new one, Banishing Light, that he just had come out. That's going to be a staple for the entire time it's in the standard. So cards like these that are known to be powerful enough that they are effective for their casting costs, and they're not going to be known players. They could be from either commons, you know, uncommons to rares and chase mythics. But, you know, uncommons actually can reach that dollar price, I believe. So that's where you start to see where there's staple uncommons.
So what does that mean? You know, I think a lot of people maybe understand that on the surface, but what does it truly mean financially?
We're talking about ubiquity here. Now, if you have a card like Stoneforge Mystic that's good in basically a few decks in Legacy, you could consider that a staple maybe, but something like Wasteland is definitely a staple. Something like Sylvan Safekeeper that goes in the sideboard of one deck, even if it is the most effective card in certain matchups and is great in that deck and blah, 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 it's got to be ubiquitous. It's got to be something that's going to get played in lots of decks, has an appeal across decks, whole archetypes can be built around it. Cards that are just very important and are solid role players. Their effect is something that may give you an incremental advantage, but it's just so good that you have to play it. Back in its day, Birds of Paradise was a staple, even though it wasn't as splashy as a card like Shivan Dragon, because Birds of Paradise, you know, filled a lot more niches and just was a solid, dependable card.
So I would say that, you know, what that means financially is that sometimes, you know, let's look at Stormbreath Dragon, a card that's expensive because it's good in standard. And, you know, it may be a staple in standard. You know, but when standard rotates, that's not a staple in modern. So that's going to kind of fall off financially. And if you look at something like Legacy, you know, a while back, Green White Maverick was, you know, a big deck, and some of the cards in it got very expensive. Well, then, you know, the metagame shifted, some different cards got printed. All of a sudden, that deck is not, you know, the next big deck. And you saw a lot of the cards that only that deck played fall off in price. So like Jason said, the Wasteland is probably the best example. No matter what happens in the format, Wasteland is so ubiquitous that there will always be one or two decks at least that do play it. So it really means cards have a lot more stability financially rather than, you know, they're prone to kind of go up and down based on how one or two decks do.
And one more hallmark of a staple is the better it is, the more likely it is to be a 4-of. And a card that is a 4-of, is price is going to increase 4 times as fast as something that's a 1-of. Because everyone that needs them needs 4 copies.
Right.
What about commander staples, where you talk about, you know, Sol Ring, where that's a staple in commander decks. So everyone that has a commander deck is going to build it. So people that have 16 commander decks are going to need 16 Sol Rings.
Yeah, it's like, you know, no matter what commander deck you're building, it probably uses a Sol Ring. That's not the same as, you know, there are some really popular commanders out there that, you can't consider staples or so something like Soul Ring or, you know, a lot of green decks, Rampant Growth or Secure Tribalder or what have you, that sort of effect. Those are the staples, that mana ramp that goes into every deck. Even the most popular commander isn't a staple. You know, if you look at it, just the spread across the field, you know, Soul Ring's probably the best example. Coalition Relic is out there, you know, Chromatic Lantern, stuff like this. Basically, you look at those colorless cards that can fit into any deck.
Another key factor of a staple, a lot of times you can look at a card and just tell that any card that has an ability that they refuse to reprint now. And I mean, Wasteland's a great example of that, going back to it. Anything like that that is just so far ahead of the power curve or not where Wizards wants the curve to be or not where they want the game to be, those will always eternally be staples because they're less likely to be replaced. And that's the kind of cards that, like we were talking about, putting your safe money in, things like dual lands and stuff like that. A lot of times you can look towards mana bases. Those are usually your first staples of a format just because any deck that wants to play those two color combinations together is going to play. It doesn't matter what that deck is attempting to do.
Right. So let's you know, we talk about the staples and how much they cost us and how they hold their value over time is really important. So let's talk about the difference just between, you know, when you talk about the price of a card. Well, there's the retail price, there's the buy list price. You know, kind of explain how, you know, you as the lay player out there, Marcel, who, you know, you have a collection, you're trying to keep up with your collection and keep the value. How important is it for you to know, like, the retail compared to the buy list and with the importance of that in managing your collection?
I think that's the first thing that most people don't realize when you get into this. You think that, you know, whatever you buy your cards for is exactly what you're going to be able to sell your cards for. You might be able to trade them out, but selling is a whole different thing. You're going to get a lot less, close to half of what you bought the card for is how much you could sell it back. So it's going to make it a lot harder for you to be able to move your decks around and get the cards that you want to be able to have. So you got to kind of plan about it and figure out, you know, if you really want to move into a different deck that you got to get out. You got to find what cards are staples that are going to be, you can hold on to, and which cards aren't staples and the ones that you want to sell out and then move it to the other decks.
The buy list is really important because, like Wester said, it's what you can get out of your cards. And dealers' buy lists change. You know, sometimes they want standard cards. Sometimes they don't. You have to be able to shop around and know that, hey, maybe this first place you go isn't always going to be the best price you can get. Maybe you don't want to wait until the last minute to sell your cards and expect to get a value out of them you're not going to get. You just have to be realistic. And I think that helps you manage your funds, knowing that, hey, maybe I can put my money into these staples that are going to hold their value better than some of the stuff that's the flavor of the week. So that's where buy lists really help a lot, and you have to know the difference. So the and one other thing to talk about is when you may hear us speak about the spread. What the spread means is if a card, say, is retailing for $5 and maybe a dealer out there is buying it for $4, the spread is the difference, the percentage difference between what the retail price is and what a dealer will buy it at. So if a $5 retail card is being bought by $4, the spread on it is 20%. So what we use the spread to talk about that term is usually a card that's going up in price, has momentum behind it, will have a smaller spread because it shows that dealers want it more. It's gaining popularity. Whereas cards that maybe are falling out of favor will have a larger spread because nobody really wants to get them right then.
We like to use spread as kind of a gauge of dealer confidence in the price changing. A lower spread means if they're paying close to what retail is now, they think they'll be able to sell for more than retail later. So if you look at a standard card, almost down the board for standard cards, even for staples, the spread is going to be about 40 plus or minus 7-8%. You know, 32-48% is going to be the spread on standard cards. And basically for older stuff that gets played in modern, legacy, stuff like that, the spread will be closer to 25 or 30. Cards over $50, you know, you're not going to have a 45% spread on a $70 card because they know that even though their percentage margin is, you know, the same, it's going to be more money. So they're willing to pay $60 for a Force of Will they can sell for, you know, 80.
So how do you come up with these numbers? You know, break it down real simple. And then is there any tools out there to make it easy to figure out spreads?
Well, the spread calculation is the expressed as a percentage. It's the difference between the highest price that people are buying it for and the lowest price people are selling it for. As you know, the denominator there is the sale price. So if, like Corbin said, a $5 retail card being bought for $4 has a 20% spread because 5 minus 4 is 1 and 1 over 5 is 0.2. So that as a percent is 20%. There are websites that actually calculate that for you. Quiet Speculation has a good tool at mtg.gg. That's the website. MTG Price has a good spread calculator. I think mtgstocks.com does as well. Those are the three sites I use for a lot of my pricing data. I'm sure there are more out there, but those are the ones with which I'm most familiar.
Yeah, MTGO Goldfish, right? Marcel is the one to use for Magic Online.
Yeah, I don't think they do spreads there, but that's definitely a place that I use to check prices.
Mm-hmm.
So that, I mean, that could go hand in hand with the buy lists because they don't necessarily sell the buy list. They tell you the sell price, but you can give or take, you know, roughly spread. You could say like a 10% spread because Modal is much tighter than paper. And then you could kind of figure out what the buy list is. But, you know, knowing the prices is very important, having some kind of site that feeds you everything. Like MTG Stocks is a big fan of people that are into paper magic. MTG or Goldfish, I like a lot. It got everything you need and it's, you know, pretty much right there along with, graphs and stuff for over time. So it's kind of like the stock market.
Yeah. So while we're on the topic, I mean, are there any other, you know, must have sites? I know that we hit some of the big ones, MTG Stocks. You know, a lot of people buy cards from TCG Player. Because that's a marketplace where a lot of different people can go to sell their cards. And MTG Stocks tracks that. MTGO Goldfish tracks what people are selling it for in Magic Online. Then you have, you know, your Channel Fireball, your Star City, your Cool Stuff Inc., who have, you know, the higher end retail prices because they have, you know, so the reputation to back it up. And then, you know, usually the quote unquote cheapest place to find your cards is sometimes eBay. You know, when there's eBay has its own built-in risks because you don't know what you're getting. You're like that. So when you talk about the price of a card, it can actually vary just depending on where you go, and each one of those has their advantages and disadvantages. I mean, are there any other places or, you know, things to know about where to find the price of a card?
I mean, I think it's important to know, and especially since you mentioned TCG Player, that if you're looking for a more realistic value, really checking just a buy list in general is really a good idea of like not only what you're going to get out of it, but really that ends up being about what TCG low is most of the time, especially on smaller cards. And so that's like a pretty good gauge as well as far as like what a real world value is if you're trying to sell it between somebody at your local shop or something like that.
So you may wonder, you can understand why a shop would want to buy at the buy list price because they've got a 40% margin built in already. They know they're going to make more, you know, than they bought it for when they sell it. So you may wonder why someone like in my position or Ryan's position would sell it buy list. And I think that's something we should cover. Why would we ever do something like that when we're clearly leaving money on the table?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people would love to get, you know, the retail value for their cards, but that doesn't always happen, right? I mean, not everyone has a place to sell their cards for retail, right?
It's on SCG. I see it on SCG. It says it's $10. I want $10 for my card.
That is unfortunately the attitude a lot of people have, but it's just not realistic.
You sound like every person on Craigslist ever.
Yeah. You know what a card's worth? A card is worth what somebody's willing to pay right now for it. That's what a card is worth. And that number does not always turn out to be what Star City has it at retail.
So the reason that someone like Ryan or someone like myself will sell a card for buy list, there's many reasons, one of which we talked about a little bit. Now, your margins selling for TCG low, and I sell for TCG low because I want my card to sell immediately. I want it to get out of there, so I want to be the first. Card's gone. I want it out. So when I'm looking through stuff, I'm looking through the buy list numbers. If I see a 10%, 12% spread between TCG low and the buy list, you know, I'm doing a lot of work to make that 10%. I could just slap it in a box with a bunch of other cards, you know, and it's gone. I get that money instantly. I don't put it on TCG Player, wait, you know, list it, maybe lower the price later. When it sells, I put it in an envelope with a stamp. I pay TCG Player flat 50 cents plus 10% of the item's value. I, you know, eat the cost of the stamp, the envelope, the top loader, the sleeve, the tape. If you can get under like a 40, you know, if a card's got under 35% spread, I just ship to a buy list. Now, something that, you know, has a little bit of higher value where that you know, extra 10% is $5. Okay, now we're talking. But if that extra 10% is 12 cents, if it's a dollar, you know, what's your time worth? So actually, it makes a lot of sense to sell stuff with very low spread on just to a buy list as opposed to TCG player low. So it you can't be paying buy list if your plan is to sell it buy list. So you have to be a little bit selective in what you pay cat for. But if you're trading cards with very high spread into cards with very low spread, which is what I love to do, it's a win-win because people mostly during this during standard season want to pick up that high spread standard stuff that's got like the 40% spread. And I would love to trade a Sylvan Caryatid with the 40% spread straight up for a card with a 10% spread because I'm making an extra 30% and I was going to buy list either card.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that is one of the win-wins of trading. And it really shows, you know, like you said, it's what's your time worth. It's a convenience factor. You know, people sell cards all the time. They come in, you know, to my store and want to sell cards. And it's, they say, well, you know, maybe I could get more for this online. I'm like, you know, you could, and you're welcome to do that. But you have to put in the time to do that and the effort. And I can give you this money today, or you can go home and put in the time to do that. And if that's worth it to you, more power to you. Most of the time, it's a convenience thing for people because your time is typically better spent doing something else than sitting there listing a bunch of cards on TCG Player to get an extra $10. So, you know, there you go. That kind of sprains it.
So with the buy list, I actually have never done a buy list myself. I mean, I've gone to a dealer and then I done it that way. But what is better? Is it better to go to a dealer at a GP or an event, or is it better to do it online?
I think
it very much depends on what kind of stuff you're moving. Right. I think my primary business is selling cards that are a dollar and under. I buy massive quantities of bulk, and I move a lot of cards that are that small. Nobody at a GP wants to sit down and look through a bunch of 5Ks full of 5-cent, 10-cent cards and put them out on a buy mat. That's just not going to happen. And if you're into picking up large collections, or that's kind of your magic gig, is, you know, looking on Craigslist locally or picking up your local store's bulk after that, or stuff like that, and picking it, then you definitely want to be shopping online. If you are moving a lot of higher end cards, it's kind of a toss up, and a major factor on that is near mint or not, because when you send to a buy list online, if it is not near mint, they have a set deduction that they are going to take off for it, and it is their discretion. And there are times when you're going to get paid 60% of that buy list value, even though you may feel that your card, you know, wasn't that beat up. And if you take it to an event, you can sit there directly across from somebody. They offer you a number, and if you don't like it, you say no. And you can do the same thing over online, but that involves you shipping it, having to wait, telling them no on it, and then getting it shipped back to you. So you're talking about 2-3 weeks at least turnover on most of these cards. So it really depends on the kind of stuff you're trying to move. And, you know, what exactly your goal is. Obviously, you're going to get paid a little quicker in person if you can make it to a GP. But a lot of times, you know, those guys are so swamped or they run out of money, stuff like that. Or they may just not want some of the cards you want. And if you are shipping it online, you have a lot more options, which sounds strange as there are technically, you know, a ton of vendors at these events. But most of the time, they're looking for a lot of the same cards.
Okay, Ryan, that was a really good explanation. You actually used a word that we want to talk about next. You said you buy massive quantities of bulk. Now let's talk about what bulk is and what that means.
I mean, bulk, really, it depends on what kind of bulk you're talking about, but the average ideal bulk in the commonly accepted term for it in this business is buying 1,000 cards at a time is usually how you measure it because that's the easiest way for monetary purposes. And in the business, it's just accepted that on average, 1,000 random Magic the Gathering cards are worth $5.
So what is bulk? Like, are you going to get 1,000 Sylvan Caryatids or?
It's very unlikely. Bulk, I mean, if you were to buy bulk from like an eBay lot, or if you were to buy bulk from me, what you are going to get is the cards that are not on a buy list. You're going to get cards that are, you know, perfectly playable, all commons, uncommons, more than likely, unless someone misses a rare. They are not going to be cards that are worth anything most of the time. You're not going to be getting format staples. You're not going to be getting any of that kind of stuff. But what we do in the business is we go out and buy this quote-unquote bulk from people as they don't know what's in it. And you just kind of take a chance. You say, you know what, this is going to be worth at least $5 if I resell it, or more if you make lots and stuff. Or, you know, I get to then pick this bulk and you get to get, you know, all the money that comes out of that from all of those 5-cent, 10-cent, dollar, $2 picks, however good the bulk may be. But on average, bulk is just, I guess you, I don't want to say the worst cards in Magic, but that really is kind of what it is.
They are. Like, it's true.
The leftover fodder.
Or there's a term we use that is true bulk. And true bulk is professionally picked bulk. Like, you're not going to find the, you know, a nimble mongoose in there. You're not even going to find, like, a 5 cent card. True bulk is, like, just total garbage.
Like you won't find Guildgates in my bulk because Adventures On has them.
Right.
Because you can get a nickel for them or a dime. Right.
Exactly.
So
4 cents.
So that's how it works. There you go, 4 cents. So that's how it works with the commons and uncommons. When it comes to rares, basically, you know, the cash price on any rare that you pull out of a Magic pack is 10 cents in cash. That's what you can get from basically any dealer. So, you know, a lot of times if you open up 100 packs of a random Magic set, a fair amount of those rares that you open will be bulk. So basically, you know, the retail, like the TCG value of a lot of different rares is somewhere between maybe 15 cents to 75 cents. So the cards that fall in that range are generally accepted as bulk rares to a dealer. I mean, sometimes you'll get a quarter, maybe you'll get 50 cents, but a lot of the times, basically anything that the retail value is 75 cents or lower is pretty much a bulk rare. So if you have those cards in your binder and you want to sell them, because, you know, as you play Magic, you accumulate hundreds of these over the years, those are 10 cents. And sometimes you can gather a bunch of them up and trade them into a dealer at 10 cents a piece and turn them into something you actually want.
Magic Online, it is not the same story. It's hard to move a lot of cards at once, so you're not going to be selling 1,000 of anything. So there's people that do sell a lot of bulk of their common, you know, because there's going to be a lot of draft picks and a lot of bulk just common cards. And there's some bots that will buy them, and they'll give you just fractions of a penny for each one that they'll get. So, you know, this is, it can be deflating for some people, but it's just the price of the economy of motos. A lot of cards that are bulk are just have no value at all.
Right.
You'll find like rares that are 5 cents that you can buy for 5 cents. And that's a bulk rare price. And so you could get a good, if you wanted to get a build a bulk deck, you can build a bulk deck for fairly cheap, but you're not going to get a bunch for 1,000. But so yeah, something to think about.
Right. When you're going on. So one of the things Ryan mentioned was picking, you know, we go through and we pick the cards. Well, what that means, like you said, if you know, I get a 1,000 card box from somebody that has a bunch of commons and uncommons, you go in and you find the stuff to pick. You find that stuff that you can get a quarter for, and you kind of go and pick it out, and then you're left with the true bulk, as Jason said. So, you know, that's something that, you know, you as a player, if you don't know a lot about it, you can do some, just, you know, you probably know what's played. You know, if you're looking through a box and you find Dismember or Blood Artist, you know those cards are played. You can probably pick them out. So that's kind of the point of that. So if you are a person who wants to sell your bulk, you know, you may not be able to catch everything, and you may not be able to catch those 10 cent cards. And you know what? That's okay. If you go through your own stuff and can at least pull out the stuff you think is playable and look it up online, like at some of those websites we were talking about, like mtg.gg or MTG Price, you can kind of find out, and you can save money that way or make more money. So that's kind of a good rule of thumb, is if you remember it being played somewhere, pull it out and look.
So when we'll say pick in a few different ways, pick the verb is going through and finding all that stuff, and pick the noun is a card that is on the buy list. It's worth picking out. It's your, you know, 4 cent Guildgate. It's your, you know, 12 cent snuff out. It's your 75 cent nimble mongoose. It's the stuff that's worth buy listing. So when we call a card a pick, is a card that is worth picking out of bulk.
And there's pick of the week, which you have to tune in next week for that one.
That's a segue to like next week. That's the most extreme segue you've ever done.
Hey,
going deep with the segues.
Taking it to the next level and the
1,000-0. Okay, so, you know, as a new player getting in, you know, one of the things we all worry about is standard. You know, the new standard cards come out. Well, one of the things that happens that we all know about every year is rotation. Every October, when the new fall set comes out, standard rotates. And what happens a lot of time is that the standard cards that are rotating out will lose value. Because standard is the most played format in Magic, so it kind of drives the most prices because people want the new stuff for their standard deck. So, you know, one of the things you have to learn, which we'll talk about in a future episode is basically just kind of how to handle rotation, what the cycle of cards look like, the price of a card over its life cycle. So, you know, one of the things you'll hear us talk a lot about is, well, I think this will be a thing after rotation, or, you know, you may want to get on these before rotation. So, you know, that's something to keep in mind. You'll hear us talk about. So when we talk about, that's what we're talking about, is that October when Standard rotates every year.
Pay attention, because you will experience heartbreak like none other.
if you don't follow it.
And rotation is not the same as seasonality. We'll sometimes refer to modern seasons, standard season, legacy season, blah, blah, blah. That just refers to basically every quarter. They have like a 3-month, basically the Pro Tour qualifiers are that format. So during modern season, you've got a lot of Grand Prix trials, PTQs that are modern. They qualify for modern events. So that's sort of what we mean when we refer to season. It's not the same as rotation.
Right. Okay, so now one of the things we want to make a staple of our podcast every week is reading an email from you guys. And, you know, rather than putting it off for a mailbag that we do 6 months later and, you know, it's too late for us to be super helpful, we want to try to keep this as, you know, as up-to-date as possible. So if you guys have questions for us, if you have a question about a card, if you have a question about any of the subjects we've talked about, if you just want to, you know, ask us anything, you feel free to send us an email at brainstormbrew@gmail.com, and we'll answer it. So the one we have this week comes from Matthew Willis. And he says, first, let me start by saying I've thoroughly enjoyed listening to the last 20 or so episodes of Brainstorm Brewery. In my opinion, you guys produce one of the best Magic the Gathering podcasts. The financial side of the game, coming from someone who has played since 1994, is more complex than ever, and you make it all accessible. Thank you. Well, Matthew, thank you first. Okay, so his question is about buying into Modern, or rather trading into Modern. He says he has a complete Legacy Goblins deck with a play set of Wasteland and Rashad Imports. He's had the deck for 8 years and just doesn't play Legacy. He's interested in Modern and wants to buy in because you're able to play more Modern. After examining many of the top performing decks of recent tournaments, how I like to play and referencing my current collection, I think a Modern Blue-Red control deck would be my easiest to buy into. He has the Scalding Tarns and the Arid Mazes and the Shocklands. What he lacks are the other expensive cards in the deck. Now, his question is, would it be unwise to trade some of his Wastelands and Ports for the remainder of the deck, specifically Snapcaster, Vanillion Click, Cryptic Man, and Colonnade, which are all cards that cost, you know, between $20 and $50 right now. You know, as for everyone, money is a concern for him, so he can't just buy it. He needs to trade into it. So, you know, if we boil down his question, I guess what he's saying is you're trying to get into a format. He's already got some of the stuff he needs for this deck he wants to play. He's worried about trading, you know, some of those staples that we talked about in Legacy, like Wasteland, that, you know, seem to only go up in price, for these newer cards that maybe don't have as proven of a track record, as far as price wise. So, you know, how do you guys respond to that? If somebody's wanting to move into one format from another, and may have to give up some value in order to do so, how do you go about handling that?
I think he's worried about two things, right? There are two scenarios where this is bad. One scenario is they reprint Cryptic Command, Snapcaster, Vendilion Click, whatever. They reprint that stuff. He loses a ton of value. He basically traded $500 worth of cards for $500 worth of cards. It turns into $300. The other scenario is that those $500 worth of Wastelands and Ports turns into $900 in a year, and he traded $900 for $500. Those are both really bad scenarios, and both of those things have happened in this game. However, I don't really think it's that big a deal, even if it does. I don't think it's going to be that drastic. I think the stuff he's trading for is so ubiquitous in Modern, has some of those cards have applicability in Legacy, and the fact that they're not going to reprint Snapcaster again in Standard, probably, or a V-Click. So what he's talking about is like maybe a Modern Masters or sort of a thing. I think if really your primary concern is turning cards that you don't use into cards you will use, you should absolutely go for it. Because even if you do lose a little bit of value, if one of those two scenarios happens, that's no different than going out and spending the money on the cards you want. And in the short term, you get what you want for something you're not using, and that's absolutely why he held on to those Wastelands and Rashadan ports, so they would go up like they have. Those cards both just peaked recently, so I think now is probably the perfect time to do it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I would say this. We're a podcast that comes on every week. We talk about the financial value of cards. We talk about, you know, cards we want to have because we think they're going to go up in price. Cards we want to get rid of because we think they're going to go down in price. You know, Magic's an expensive game, and those are all very important things to worry about. But I think the thing you can't lose sight of is that, you know, we play Magic to play Magic. We don't play Magic to own a bunch of pieces of cardboard. If you have a Legacy deck that's cool to own but sits there and doesn't do anything and you want to play Modern and you can't afford to just buy the cards, that's what you have Magic cards for, man, to play them. If you – it's okay to lose a little value if you get to do what you want to do with your stuff. I would much rather play in a Modern tournament and lose, you know, a little value in the process if I'm actually going to get to play Magic with my friends.
So, yeah, so we don't necessarily think you're going to lose value, but I think what we're saying is the worst-case scenario is actually not that bad.
This is correct. Play Magic. This is the right decision. I mean, I myself would shudder at trading anything Legacy, like you build up towards your Legacy. So I couldn't do it. I would just feel bad. But, you know, if it's about playing Magic and that's your purpose, then, you know, go play Magic. That's what it's about. It doesn't matter to collecting dust because it doesn't, what good is that? It's a waste of time. You're waiting for it to go up a little bit more so then you can sell it for a little bit more. The cards you want to go up went up an equal amount of money, if not.
And it's not, yeah, and it's not like he's, like we said, it's not like he's trading, you know, for Journey into Nyx cards that nobody's going to care about in a year. He's trading for Modern staples that some of them are also Legacy staples. It's maybe a little downward, but it's a lot closer to a sideways trade than it is a down trade, I would say.
Yeah, but if you were now, say, changing the scenario and you're talking about, let me go put this Legacy Staples into this Mono Black Devotion deck.
Right, for Standard.
I would tell you to go slap yourself and then come back.
Well, I mean, there's a difference between, like, hey, maybe this $500 becomes $600, and you know, there's a difference between that and, hey, maybe this $500 becomes $50, right? Like, you know, there's always a line there somewhere.
It's really, do we have the faith that Modern is going to be maybe it won't be the next Legacy, but, you know, it'll be the next pre-being ruined extended.
Well, it's going to be better than that.
Yeah, so
Jeff Hoechlin has said Legacy has become a grind. He's looking forward to playing Modern games. That's a pretty good indicator Modern is here to stay for a little while.
So, yeah, thank you, Matt, for the email. You know, if any of you guys out there want to send something our way, if you want to have a question, if you want to tell us how stupid we are and said the name of a card wrong, we'll welcome them all.
Oh, hey, one more thing, actually. When I responded to Matt's email, I made one point that we forgot to make here. If you are trading Legacy stuff down, meaning into less expensive cards, Modern stuff at this point, anything that's Modern specific, I would try to get a bit of a premium. So one way that I like to get a premium is I traded away a 40 set of dual lands doing this where I said, I will trade you my dual lands for your Standard stuff, but I'm going to put your Standard stuff at buy list prices. I'm going to put my dual lands at retail. And 4 people out of every 5 said no, that's fine. But one person said, yes, I would absolutely love to trade Standard poop into dual lands, and I don't care what premium I have to give up to get it. So, you know, it's not going to insult people to offer them that. You'd be like, look, I'm not interested in trading my Legacy stuff that has long-term value for Standard stuff unless we do it at buy list prices. So if you are trading down, like he's talking about doing, trading Legacy into non-Legacy, Snapcaster, Vendalion Click aren't really considered non-Legacy, but if you're picking up anything Modern specific, you might try to get a bit of a premium. And I encouraged him to try that with whomever he's trading.
And from the talent, what we got from the talent?
I mean, they pretty much covered it all. There's not much more.
So we're going to now dub Jason or Ryan. I mean, Jason and Corbin, you guys are now the talent. Sorry, yep. Ryan.
I'm okay with it. I mean,
No. I can't take that title from Ryan.
Stay on the subject without going too in-depth on it. And, I mean, I think anything else that we're going to use to build off that should be used in a future segment of, you know, this episode 101. I think we've pretty well covered most of the basics this time around.
Yeah. I mean, you know, guys, this was our attempt. We want to you know, take our, we always want to improve the podcast. And one of the pieces of feedback we had from you guys was, you know, you guys talk about a lot of stuff, but the episodes get kind of old after a week or two because your information gets outdated. So that's one of the reasons why we want to do this Finance 101 and pick up on this stuff. And we know it's going to be kind of a learning, growing process for all of us. So, you know, I'll repeat, just please keep the feedback coming. We want to make this into something that not only is enjoyable every week for people to listen to, but lasts, has some lasting values. So, you know, this is our first shot at it. Finance 101, episode 101. See what we did there?
Oh, so, wait, that's why we did that?
Who knew,
no,
right?
No,
just a coincidence. That's just a coincidence.
I can't believe it lined up like that.
It was pretty lucky, yeah.
Yeah, it's only coincidences on this show. But so we will have, you know, we're going to do a segment every week and we'll expand upon different topics. And maybe every once in a while, we may have a whole episode on a certain topic, like buy listing. It seems like a pretty deep topic. So, you know, send us emails, send us feedback, what you guys want. Based on feedback, that's what you guys are going to get. So if you don't email us, then you only could be mad when you don't hear what you want because you need to give us feedback. You can reach us at brainstormbrew@gmail.com. You can reach me, Marcel, at MarcelMTG on Twitter. That's the only place you can reach me, or MarcelMTG@gmail, but yeah, no. And then Corbin, where can they find you at?
Yeah, you guys can find me. I'm active on the Quiet Speculation forums. You know, feel free to blow up my Facebook. It's Corbin Hostler. I'm on Twitter at chostler88. You know, feel free to hit me up at any of those places. Bug me for a League of Legends game if you really want to get at me.
I wouldn't recommend playing League of Legends with Corbin. Can't get behind that. Can't do it.
Or rot your brain.
Definitely don't play League of Legends with Jason then.
That's fine. Everyone, you play with me, everyone you'll play with is terrible. I'm Jason E. Alt on Twitter. I'm active in the QS forums. I'm active in many Magic-related subreddits. You can contact me through Gathering Magic or Quiet Speculation or the other myriad sites I write for. You can contact me through the Brainstorm Brewery website. That is the content website associated with this podcast, where I'm the content manager. I'm very, very findable. So hit me up in one of those. Oh, Facebook. I forgot to. I'm on the Faces book now. I resisted for a while, but I'm doing that thing. So hit me up somehow.
Ryan Bouchard. I can be found on Gathering Magic and on Twitter at Cripple Command, CRYPPLE Command. That's about it. I mean, you can subscribe to me on Facebook, but most of my posts on there are rarely magic related.
Wrap us up, Marcel. Give us the outro.
Thank you for listening, and tune in next week for the regular scheduled program. Now we're out of here, Batman.
Why does Batman care?
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.